Okay, so I'm really happy to welcome onto the Metaverse Show co-founder and CEO of Absence Labs, Kathan Jogue. Welcome, Kathan. So Absence Labs is a pioneering AI company building the next generation of points and incentive distributions for Web3, what they call points as a service, which isn't necessarily what they do isn't necessarily obvious from that description. So we're going to kind of unpack that a little bit later. But before we do, welcome to the Metaverse Podcast. In this episode, we're exploring the challenges and solutions surrounding incentive distribution that's reshaping the landscape of digital engagement and security. Joining us is an exceptional founder from one of our standout portfolio companies who's at the forefront of tackling these issues with innovative AI technology. But before we dive into it, I have a small favor to ask. If you enjoy our show and the insights we bring to you, please consider subscribing. Your support makes a huge difference. It not only supports the show, but also helps us continue bringing valuable content your way and supporting Web3 founders. So hit the subscribe button and let's keep this journey going together. Now let's get started with today's episode. So welcome on the show, Kathan. Absence Labs is a portfolio company that we worked with through our ZK cohort, our Zero Knowledge cohort in 2023. Originally, the startup joined as a Sybil and bot detection startup. You successfully launched a product, but as a consequence of that, got lots of feedback from users and began to see that actually there was real demand in a particular vertical. And so technically, you are joining us mid-pivot, which I'm really excited by because I don't think we've ever had a founder on the show real-time talking about a mid-pivot, that process, I guess the realization, and I think that's going to be really exciting for a lot of Web3 founders, beyond, of course, the topic that you're challenging in the vertical itself. So Absence Labs has been around as an entity since 2022, and you've helped a number of projects and protocols, I think FusionX, Tsunami Finance, and CapEx, and you launched that first product, the original product, Absence Protect, back in January 24. And you've had great backing, you know, Six Man Ventures, of course, Outlier Ventures, Builder Capital, Room 40 Ventures, Geometry Labs. So you successfully closed some funding. So maybe before we get into the pivot, and then more specifically, the kind of technology stack that you're building, the kind of problem statement that goes with all that, be good to learn a little bit more about you. You are a co-founder, so it'd be good to hear about you and your co-founder. I know you both met at Columbia University, and it's very much a kind of co-founder initiative.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Glad to be sharing that story. I've been a founder for 6 years, actually. Started my first company, which is still alive, in AI computer vision. This was a freshman year dorm room experiment with a couple of my friends, and we sort of took that off. I've had quite a topsy-turvy journey ever since. Got into cryptography early on in high school, middle school. So that bug was always present. Ended up doing a lot of research, encrypted machine learning, and then eventually wanted to do a PhD in computational neuroscience before I met Andrew. Andrew and I met the summer after COVID. That's when both of us were like, what is this world of blockchain? You know, what is Web3? And we ended up doing, again, research on how attackers might attack the Bitcoin network with something called selfish mining. And at that point of time, you know, the founder of Avalanche had written a paper about it. And so we were like, well, that sounds super exciting. Let's work together. And then oddly enough, while I went down heads down into research, Andrew went into TradFi working at Goldman Sachs. And both of us with the different routes ended up back in 2022 saying, wow, he was like, TradFi is so slow. I was like, well, there's this, I got nerd sniped. I was talking about all the cool things that Web3 is doing today. We got together and just decided to build a product together. That's sort of how we met.
Very cool. And just for context, the other company you mentioned still going since 2018 is Binit, right? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, Binit. As in bin it, toss your trash into the bin. We were tackling recycling and waste management. We actually closed a very successful second round of fundraising last month.
Very cool. Okay, so serial founder. And so then this kind of research into how you might attack a network led you into kind of thinking through incentive design, I guess. So maybe you could talk about the kind of the origin idea behind Absence Labs and then what the process that brought you through to the pivot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'd love to share that. And it's funny that you mentioned because we started off back in 2022 wanting to bring AI on chain. That was the tech that we were dealing with. We were looking at homomorphic encryption and zero knowledge cryptography, chatting with companies like Modulus Labs, 0x Spark, really brainstorming on, hey, hey, how do we make smart contracts smarter? But then something that both of us realized was, as founders in college, it might actually be much easier to choose a vertical instead of building a platform. And that was largely empirical. So, you know, everybody should pick and choose how they should approach startups, especially in Web3, because the playbooks often don't overlap with Web2. But we said, okay, let's go out, talk to as many people as possible and see what is a problem we can solve with AI that they might be able to benefit from. A lot of people were talking about identity. And particularly, you know, caring to know who was using their product. Maybe it was network participants, you know, networks like Helium wanted to know, hey, are those nodes even real that are providing that 5G coverage? With Chainlink, you know, are these people actually giving me real data, these nodes that are connected to this distributed network? And we thought AI might help there. So we built a simple product using ZK. So far, didn't even touch AI. We were like, let's just build an MVP really quickly. Let's use ZK to bring that off-chain heuristic of like, hey, is this person a human or a robot? And how somehow make the smart contract understand it. That really took off. And in the initial days, you know, we got a lot of traction with people saying, hey, of course, we'll integrate this on-chain technology. And we built some momentum, but we realized a large part of Web3 would still prefer to use off-chain technology, something they can integrate into their websites rather than change their contracts. And that was a significant sort of hurdle that we were trying to overcome, even during the program, by the way. And Outlier Ventures really helped us sort of understand how to navigate that landscape. And that's how we came to launch our first official product after working with some design partners called Absinthe Protect that said, hey, use this on your website, and then you'll understand which addresses are human, which addresses are automated if you're being attacked by a Sybil form, and then make your decisions accordingly. That was a really exciting moment. We got a lot of inbound. A lot of folks decided to use our product for the first time at scale. We started getting a lot of input and insight. And funnily enough, over 80% of the folks that were using the product said, we're actually using this to decide who to give points to, or how do we make sure that when we have a $5,000 reward pool we're distributing over 30 days, that the same person isn't spinning 30 accounts and just taking half of that money? Because, you know, we really want to incentivize organic growth, focus on users who really are aligned with the product. And that was sort of the aha moment where we were like, well, this is fantastic. If you really want that, let's just focus on that. And that made us come full circle. And we're now building AI-powered incentive distribution.
Very cool. So you're kind of mid-pivot. So you're now executing on building the solution based upon that demand. What does that stack look like now? How do you determine that roadmap?
Very good question. So we decided to focus on a specific set of customers right now, just to make the journey easier. Although incentives points are quite a general term and quite broadly applicable to all sorts of products in and out of Web3 to a certain extent, we decided to focus our attentions on DEXs, and in particular study the behaviors of not only traders who bring in volume, but also to focus on the participants that bring in liquidity. Now, in case of perps, it would be, you know, setting up open interest for first spot DEXs. It would be largely someone who provides liquidity. How do we incentivize behavior that allows DEXs to grow? And the reason this is an interesting problem for us to start off with is because DEXs are always in a death match. There's a set of DEXs out there in the world and they're all competing for the same pie. How do we create a positive sum game out of this entire setup? What we're focusing on is a subset of AI called reinforcement learning. Reinforcement learning really talks about an agent that explores its environment, learns from its environment, and then changes its policy to behave in that environment so it can maximize a certain reward. For us, what that means is, what are the knobs and dials that we can twist and turn such that the behaviors of participants and DEXs change to a positive sum, change to actually bring value to the DEX? And now these knobs and dials might look like certain multipliers on certain assets. They might look like giving boosts to certain pools that have certain kinds of liquidity providers. All of these would be actions that the agent, i.e. Absinthe Labs AI, can perform. And our goal is to really just grow value on the DEX. So that, on the high level, is what the stack would look like in terms of actually building a product like this.
Very cool. And so I guess one of the critical things then becomes around security, right? Because, and this perhaps links to your original product, because if you have these kind of responsive, dynamic, I don't know what the term you would use, agents effectively optimizing the incentives for the system, then it's clearly a point of attack. Like if somebody can create something that can game that, it's all about trying to game the system, right? That's one of the brilliant things about crypto in a way, is that that network, it's hardening overall Web3. It's not necessarily even a bad outcome, right? But it's just kind of part of the game. But it does become a kind of target, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, The key difference there, I think, would be oftentimes in the way that points or reward programs are done today. And, you know, we're not really, like, of course, we could also talk about the way that people would launch their tokens, but we're also fundamentally talking about simply rewarding your customers on a semi-periodic basis. These conditions are either often predefined or conveyed to the participants in a way where sometimes highly singular behaviors are manifested by participants where they maximize, sure, they maximize, you know, the profits that they get, but also end up really doing things that ought not to be a good use of their time. And these behaviors are giving, you know, this isn't the primary reason why this shouldn't be done, but it's really giving crypto a bad rap. You have these grinders and farmers who basically are just click farming on points and rewards to make, you know, daily wages. And at that point, you start thinking, well, are incentives really serving their purpose? Like, am I actually finding users who want to use my DEX to trade, or did I just find a group of 10 people who wanted to make a quick buck? And that brings us back to that static metric. The way things are being done with these static metrics is they're finding folks like this, you know, the sort of the lowest of the rung kind of participant that you would want on your platform that probably won't help you find product market fit down the line. So how do we bring that moving goalpost in? We have an AI that keeps changing the rules and changing the rules faster than ideally a human would be able to figure out how to game them, or a bot might be able to figure out how to game them. And I got to say, I mean, this is always a cat and mouse game. That's what makes it so fun. And that's why building a product in this space is so exciting, is because always trying to be two steps ahead of what might happen. That's super exciting.
If we look at this in a kind of broader context, obviously you and I are very excited about Web3. But relatively speaking, as a market, you know, and kind of especially in the context of active users, users that participate in networks, is a relatively small addressable market. I know you would have kind of spent a lot of time exploring this within the accelerator program, although I know the pivot kind of happened post program. How do you look at this as an opportunity that's bigger than it is today? And is it just limited to what we currently understand Web3 as, or do you think that these kind of principles around incentive design will extend into, you know, entirely new domains?
That's a very good question. I mean, I think fundamentally what Web3 allows us to do is sort of tokenize value, right? That's the fundamental principle that Web3 has sort of established. And now there's these tendrils that are sort of moving into other domains. The metaverse, you know, social in particular, DeFi has been established primarily as an incumbent sort of product market fit achieved use case. And the repeated exposure of people wanting to transfer value, which represents something that is intangible, is something that's super exciting to me. In particular, if you can sort of take a heuristic, right? For example, in this case, it's a social app and you're sort of transferring value, transferring ownership between people, between participants. That's an exciting concept that doesn't just scale linearly, you know, it scales with the network effect. That's particularly why we were interested in incentives, because it doesn't seem like Web3 and its success would be uncorrelated with the success of good incentive distribution. In order to have Web3 grow as a market, we do need to be able to distribute incentives effectively and to the right people at the right time. I guess my way of answering your question would be what I can do and what Absent Labs can do to guarantee that, you know, our pie grows exponentially, hopefully over time, is make sure that the pieces that are needed to be put in place, that is incentives, are actually put in place. And so that would be my take.
You look at Bitcoin, that's an incredibly mature network now. Its incentive design elegantly has coordinated, you know, billions of dollars of investment and economic activity. Now on par in terms of market cap with, you know, I think it surpassed Berkshire Hathaway the other day. It kind of keeps going past all these tech stocks. So it's proven out that, you know, good incentive design can coordinate significant economic activity. And yet, you know, I think if you look at many other kind of networks at the moment, they're often criticized for kind of the lack of sophisticated or effective token design. There's clearly a huge amount of work to help people optimize these networks through iteratively through token design, you know, applying engineering principles. But then if we kind of go broader than that and we think about tokenize everything, and through tokenize everything, we can program rules and their incentives into the network, then in theory, if you subscribe to tokenize everything, then the market is near unlimited or limited to the global economy. But I think if you look at networks and participants, especially with advances in AI, to what extent do you think these incentives will be for people versus bots, agents, you know,
Of course. Thanks, Jamie. I think that's a really good question. And I hope we're in a decent position to answer this. Spent a large part of last year really studying Sybil behavior and bot behavior as we iterated over our first versions of the product. And a story we like to usually quote is, it works along the principle of, if you have a metric that is trying to observe a phenomenon and report to you the success or the health of that phenomenon, if you start optimizing for the metric itself, it stops being representative of what it's supposed to communicate. For example, usually your weight is a good metric to indicate your health. What it says is, okay, you eat on a regular basis and good foods and you exercise on a normal routine or regimen. But if you start optimizing to get your weight down, you end up doing these crash diets. You end up, you know, really pretty much abusing at certain points of time your own health. And then your weight stops becoming a metric that represents your health. And that's usually what happens with incentive design and token design in crypto, is when you have these conditions, these metrics that are supposed to report network health, organic growth, and the success, you have especially bots and Sybils really optimized for those metrics. And then even those metrics are shooting up into the sky, you know, the actual health of the network now is not represented by those metrics. And our take there, especially after studying these automated behaviors, is that what we need is a moving goalpost. A good way to understand health, just coming back to that analogy, is trying to stay heuristic and less objective. If we discuss somebody's health over a period of time, and that's why doctors are so good about this, is that they will understand you heuristically. And what does AI do best? It converts heuristics into mathematical equations. So the way we look at incentives is, okay, we need the goalpost to be a heuristic. What's the best way to convert a heuristic into a mathematical equation? It's AI. And that's sort of why we really moved into AI after studying these Sybil patterns of exploiting these metrics over and over again.
I'm increasingly convinced that network participation, obviously there's some very specialized forms of network participation where you might need some hardware or something like that. You might need to carry out some work. But where the assumption is that it is a person like manually doing something, I'm increasingly inclined to think that in a world of tokenized everything, that is too much overload. And the kind of the burden of sovereignty, like me as a person having to make tens of thousands of decisions in how I may or may not participate in a network is just too high to be manageable. And therefore, I'm most likely going to outsource that sovereignty. Now, that could be to specialists, but I get my guess might be that it will be increasingly to agents. Agents will carry out this work on my behalf with some kind of rules, and therefore I can have participation in networks without the kind of burden of sovereignty or kind of the mental overhead. But I don't know, how are you thinking in the context of how networks, Web3 networks will evolve?
That's an interesting take, like the angle of basically saying that oftentimes choice fatigue, choice paralysis is a real thing. And the more things we want to do, the more options we have, and usually it increases exponentially. So why not have an AI agent? And it does seem quite plausible, something intelligent that we sort of give our agency to act on our behalf. I mean, we see this in the traditional world happen quite organically, where as decisions get more and more complex, a hierarchy is automatically created in order to make those decisions more efficient. And delegation of decisions is in fact considered a very normal thing to do. I can totally see that happen in Web3. In fact, there might be some instances where I think people are trying these experiments where you have delegation of responsibility. There are also phenomena in society, although like think about the basic social contract, like back to grassroots philosophy, where the concept of, you know, helping your neighbor and understanding emotion, being empathetic to somebody else, that is something that everybody does, but it's a social contract that everybody upholds. What I'm trying to get at is there are certain fundamental things, like you said, certain non-complex things that would still be non-delegated, or you would want your agency. But then there's other complex things that, of course, delegation will make sense to do. And AI agents are best placed to do that. Now, how the ownership model looks there is very interesting. And I'm not that literate about that subject, but I'm currently getting into it. So maybe you have some thoughts there as well.
No, I mean, it's interesting. We can see in terms of DAOs, there's increasingly these, you know, delegated services, like a professionalization of certain roles and functions within DAOs, so they can be a bit more orderly and you can have higher levels of participation and, of course, like specialist participation. And I think most people would probably agree, if anybody's participated in a DAO, that actually finding ways to professionalize aspects of them is probably a good thing. But I think I would also agree, there are some things like, I don't know, rent out my spare compute or storage based on, you know, supply and demand, you know, that I probably don't want to be manually flicking a switch for. I kind of want some agent system to handle that, versus, say, play to earn economy or some kind of social, you know, Web3 based social media where it's around participation. So perhaps the kind of activity is not necessarily a kind of financial transaction. It is a transactional value, and presumably where there might be some kind of emotional reward or kind of, you know, some sense of belonging, then that's where you want to get that added benefit. But yeah, again, probably above my pay grade, but I know these within the token design team that we've got here at Outlier, you know, the kind of incentive design, it's so broad. You're looking at so many different use cases. Ultimately, bringing in the token engineering principle is about expressing that elegantly into some form of math, some formula. And actually, the more complex it is, the more unstable it is. But of course, the more difficult it is to understand from participants, like what's actually required of them. But again, I think if you're asking for logical behavior, clearly AI is, and agents are going to behave more logically to incentives than people. So I just had to have that conversation with you because it's rare we get to kind of nerd off on stuff like that. Yeah. And so then maybe kind of finally, if we zoom out, obviously, you know, you guys, as you said, have been pretty deep in zero knowledge, you know, cryptography generally. And we're looking at a resurgence of WorldCoin at the moment on a bit of a tear, both in terms of user adoption and price activity and all that kind of stuff. I don't necessarily, you know, want you to critique them, although feel free to, I do regularly. But like, what's your perspective on the state of Web3 without some kind of universal identifier or proof of personhood or even proof of bot, you know, and perhaps ownership of bot and that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I definitely have a lot of thoughts about this, and I'll try to keep it concise. But I think there's different kinds of use cases which require different levels of guarantees as to what kind of participant is involved in that particular system. There's proof of unique personhood. You know, I am this person, this particular person. You would want proof of a real-time personhood, something that a CAPTCHA solves. Hey, I am a person right now in this moment, but you don't need to know who I am. And what I'm trying to showcase is there's degrees of severity in which you would want to establish personhood. There's identifiers on your person, your face, your eyes, your name, some form of identification. There's forms of identifiers on your device. You know, hey, I'm using a MacBook Pro. This is the particular signature of this machine. And then you have your address, you know, which is like a unique key. Again, to signify, hey, there's these levels of identifiers that we get to use. What I don't understand with the identity wave is why does the narrative really have to go to the most severe form, proof of unique personhood, when you can always choose these semi-stringent, yet oftentimes sufficient conditions to establish whatever level of personhood you would want to use? So that's sort of my 1 minute way of saying that pick and choose which solutions you want to use. Oftentimes, the most stringent and strict semi-dystopian setups might not be the best way to move forward, but they have their place in history and they also have their use cases.
Yeah, and I think I saw somebody just comment on Signal's update to make it no longer by default that it displays your mobile number, which has always just been totally insane, right? And he said that, like, by default is one of the most important things we need to consider about what we're doing, both in Web 2 and Web 3. And so I think, as you say, if you go to, you know, the most stringent, the most extreme by default as a starting point, it almost feels like it should be the other way around, right? You should be going for the less severe, least overhead. Maybe just whilst I still got you on, obviously you're a builder within the ZK ecosystem. You know, it's zero knowledge is not necessarily, you know, brand new, but of course, zero knowledge in the context of Web3, there's been a huge amount of technologies being released early last year, which is why we were so keen to get out in the front and do that first program. How are you looking at the ZK space, the ZK technology stack? You know, what are its kind of limitations and what excites you about this coming into 2024?
Absolutely. And I feel very positively about ZK, largely why it was so hard to even necessitate or convince ourselves that the pivot was needed to move slightly outside the space. But ZK has this powerful ability to sort of take a computation that has happened somewhere else, and then produce a short string that can convince anybody of what that was. My most exciting time in exploring ZK was really ZK ML, zero knowledge machine learning, because ML takes something that is intangible, a concept, and codifies it into a function. And then ZK takes a function and codifies it into a proof. So when you put these two together, what you have is a proof of something intangible. And that was simply mind-blowing to me, that you could actually create a proof of something that is simply, you know, a concept, a heuristic, because you have these building blocks kept next to each other. ZK and scalability has always been a super exciting thing to explore for a lot of people for a long time. But what I'm currently more interested and excited about is the expressivity of ZK proofs. What is the scope of things you can express using ZK? And then hopefully it finds a home in a use case that actually has a blow up.
Very cool. All right. Well, look, thanks so much, Kaithan, for coming on. Thanks for sharing your journey mid-pivot. I know you've got some really exciting news coming out, I think, you know, Q2, Q3. So we didn't get to talk about it today. But what I would say is for people to kind of keep their eyes out on what you guys are up to, some really big news coming. So we're really excited about that.
Thank you very much, Jamie.